of the McKinsey report in around, what, 2000 and, was that 2000? There's been a subsequent report, but there was a McKinsey study that said television airtime needs to be, you know, exponentially grown. And that resulted in the introduction of the Jockey Club tour on Fox, the television. And actually also what has morphed into America's Best Racing. But the television time, that, you know, those first two seasons then grew into what NYRA has crafted in America's Day at the Races and Saratoga Live. And if you don't think that, you know, that those kinds of hours and you know, that kind of opportunity for get eyes on the game, I mean, that one result, frankly, justifies every round table. So that there's one example. Now that brings us to yesterday's latest emergent issue when it comes to content and ADW wrangling. It became late yesterday morning. I got a couple of emails during the second half of the show, and I really didn't have a chance to get into the specifics. But then, you know, the press releases started to fly between the New York Racing Association and Churchill Downs Incorporated, and it's another impasse. Of course, we dealt with the one before the Saratoga season started. That was resolved, you know, by opening day between FanDuel, TVG, and NYRA, and it's a very similar. It's the same basic topic: source market fee, and NYRA is asking for a 1% source market fee enhancement, and TwinSpires / CD. Not willing. This one is a little bit more pronounced than the one between NYRA and TVG. Specifically, both entities shutting off the content, and it's problematic. Obviously, NYRA Bets not showing Ellis, Colonial, Presque, Louisiana Downs, or Ocean Downs. And obviously, TwinSpires not, you know, not showing, not making Saratoga available. So there are a couple of salvos from Bill Carstangen and Dave O'Rourke, and I imagine I would like to think that Carstangen is in town today and in the room, that he and Dave O'Rourke could maybe, you know, later today, or maybe last night, or, you know, who knows. I think there's an availability here to resolve this at the highest level. Because while we, you know, you certainly understand, and we've explained this for years, that, you know, the bricks and mortar racetracks, you know, when they originally agreed to fee structures, you know, at the advent of the, you know, first it was the OTB era and then the ADW era, the numbers were disproportionate to the, you know, to the ADW entities. And you know, over the past, as those original contracts expired and were renegotiated, the racetracks have successfully, for the most part, I think, generally, you know, have balanced those scales. So you can understand. I mean, I certainly, you know, when it comes to the racetracks, and it was their mistake to begin with, to not. This is an old storyline, and in New York, I mean, you heard no less an authority than John Nehrud on the show years ago, explain, you know, the missteps that were involved. So the racetracks, you know, put themselves in Dutch with this. I mean, it was a mistake to not understand. Listen, the racetracks didn't understand in the 50s what television was. Let's be honest. They didn't, you know, they hesitated to go on television because they thought, oh, nobody will come to the races. Yikes. And then for those that weren't around when Nehrud explained this, Nehrud told the story how in the late 60s, he was sent into, at the time, you know, NYRA's trustees, and he was instructed essentially, or you know, it was asked of him by, I want to say, Hirsch Jacobs, that said, go tell them that they have to, you know, as the OTB concept was forming, said that, you know, they have to maintain control, that you know, NYRA should be in charge of the off-track betting system. And the trustees told Nehrud, no, we're not interested in doing that. We're not going to operate, you know, storefront OTBs. And Nehrud said that Jacob sent him in a second time. This has got to be around 1969 or 70, to implore them not to let the state create what they created, which was this odious construct of patronage, the OTB corporations. And then, of course, that became a model for the rest of the country to not use. Everyone said, let's create OTBs, except let's not do it the way New York did. Racetrack management does not have a great track record historically, starting with TV, and then the OTB system, and then the ADW advent. They do have a consistent record. So anyway, this is unfortunate, and it benefits nobody long term. We understand. I guess the key is, it's easy to understand and it's hard to stomach and accept, because it makes everybody suffer, even if it's, you know, for 2 days. It doesn't matter. It provides a perception, you know, particularly to the horse player, you know, the most important part of the equation. It just provides a perception that we're secondary to everything that goes on. But at the same time, tell Michael, I always liked him. It was business. We got some interesting things to do. John Gunther is going to join us. I reached out to John and Ron Winchell because, of course, their horses are going into the Hall of Fame tomorrow. And I know Ron's traveling this morning. John Gunther is going to join us shortly here. And I'm looking forward to it. It's always a treat to talk to John. And it's got to be just an unbelievable thrill, you know, to have a horse that you crafted, you know, that your program, and not that there's anything wrong with having bought a champion and then what's gone on to stallion greatness. But for John Gunther and Tanya, what they've done here and the way in which Justify is going to help shape the breed for, you know, generations, it's got to be an amazing feeling. And of course there's a million working parts to it. Everybody at the farm and then the starting the horse and getting him going and then Baffert's handling of him, to pull off the career that they pulled off, obviously, you know, was kind of a million to one shot, honestly. So we're going to talk to John in about, I'm going to say, at the top of the hour. Let me first tell you, and in fact, I just pulled up the overnight from yesterday, and now I've lost it. They will draw today for the Kaiser, you know, the back on the overnight. So kind of anticipated and confirmed by Bill Gallo. I can put that away. I can put Lisa's thing away. You know, I mentioned that track superintendent's meeting, and I know I'm jumping around from a million topics here, but I got a few things I might as well get done. That track superintendent's day, I want to pull up the calendar because I talked to Roy Smith. Where were we? Were we at Churchill? Where were we? We were at Churchill Derby week and ran into Roy and talked about coming to and broadcasting a day from the track superintendents meeting, and I just have to check because I'll be at, you know, it's in Kentucky. It's going to be a little tricky. It's going to be tricky because it's the there's a reception on Sunday night, the 8th, and of course Kentucky Downs running. That'll be the second to last day of Kentucky Downs. But then the agenda and the actual work will be the 9th and the 10th, which is day 1 and 2 of book one, basically, at Keeneland. So we'll be at Keeneland. I guess I can, you know, broadcast and then go over to, it's at Churchill. But I don't see how I'm going to be able to broadcast from Superintendent Field Day. That's too bad. Maybe we can go over and sit in on some things and record some things. Maybe that's what we'll do. Because that's a busy, that is some nutty week where, you know, we'll be at, we'll head to Kentucky Downs on Labor Day, after the show on Labor Day, closing day, Saratoga. We'll broadcast Tuesday morning from Presque Isle, and then we'll be at Kentucky Downs the rest of the week for their, the third, fourth, and fifth days of the meet, or fourth, fifth, and sixth days of the meet, then Keeneland, Monday and Tuesday, the 9th and 10th, then back to Kentucky Downs for closing day, the 11th, and then Churchill starts the September meet. 12th will be there, 12th, 13th. And then we got to figure out how to get to Erie and Philly back-to-back the next weekend. So that's the agenda. Anyway, I do want to sit in and try to get to... And Tony, we'll talk to Tony Black today. We haven't talked to Tony in a couple of weeks. Tony goes has gone to and Roy Smith is his good friend for years, and Roy, one of the, you know, now retired, but one of the most respected track supers ever, and Tony's gone out and actually has reported to, you know, for us a couple of times from the track superintendent days. Indy yesterday, I told you that was a there. Well, first of all, let me, before I talk about the two stakes, you had some disaster, near disaster. It turned out okay. Everybody, horse and rider, everybody all right from that spill in the sixth, miraculously. Then things resumed after a break, and I had actually I had just, and I was watching Saratoga, obviously, and you know, I just kind of swung over, and I was like, "What? Why is there? What's going on?" And I didn't see what happened, but then you know, figured it out pretty, you know, pretty quickly. The races that we talked about yesterday with John Dooley, for starters, we thought we had some. Basically, everything I tried yesterday got kind of quashed in one shape or form or another. It started with Pike Place, and there were, you know, there were, there was, this was off the turf, but still, the horse of Paul McGee's ends up going off at 4-5, Pike Place, so easy winner. Then we got the two stakes. So I was all excited. I find Little Gin in Class, the Tim Eggleston horse. Yeah. 7-1, 8-1. I'm like, wow, this is going to be good. Yeah. And then here's Mike Lauer. And I'm not going to be nice to Mike Lauer anymore. Mike Lauer, 47-1. Three coats. Unbelievable. Lauer, who, you know, sent three in here. This was, you could see it happening in slow motion. Three coats, the Painter Filly that Mike and Penny bred, came calling with Morales, and 96-60. Unbelievable. 96-60. So, and no, you know what's funny? I've done some fun, I haven't really talked about this enough with Saratoga. As part of sort of the DePaula play of the day, which today is that Ciccio Bello, is that the eighth? I think it's the eighth, on the rail, Derek Ryan. It's a fun race. 8-1. Second off a long layoff. With the DePaula play of the day, I've started to bet a lot of win bets, and then kind of back wheeling those horses. And they're, you know, typically mid priced long shots, 6-1, 8-1, 10-1, 12-1. And in some cases I'm doing an old school, the way I did when I first started to play a lot, back wheeling with all, and putting that shot underneath everybody. And did I do that here? I said, no need. So I just bet the horse to win. Unbelievable. Exact. I paid $759. $2. The 50-cent try paid $1,014 with second choice. None of your business. Under the Palms, the 6-5 favorite ended up fourth. So, yeah. So I thought, all right. Then I regrouped. And you'll recall we liked the Aaron West, the Justice horse, good-looking Justice, with Sammy Bermudez. 9-2. Ah, nice. And here comes $20 Demolisher. Unbelievable. Cipriano Contreras and Manny Esquivel. 9-1. $20, 20 cents. Got beat again. So, yeah, it was it was Lucy in the football at Indy yesterday. And what happened to the, there was one other, there was that race. I don't have the chart, actually. And I'm going to forget the, who won the two-year-old race that we glanced at. I'm going to have to look that up. Anyway, as anticipated, the card at Indy was very good, and I did not see, there's a pick five carryover, but I did not see, and let me look for it, because I did not see the final amount. 4 of 5 paid $5,000. And I never, I kept looking, and I went back a couple of times. Let me see if I can't find this before we call John Gunther. Let's see if it's, I went back, I thought maybe it would show up on the chart later. And of course we got the pick six carryover here locally. Let me see if it's under, no, it's not there. All right, I will try to get you an answer on this. Shouldn't be that hard. And there is the stake today. Mary Holman George. And goes as the on the this is actually a Mary Holman George quarter horse, because they've already run the regular Mary Holman George. I do have the card here somewhere. I've got so many. I mean, the PP situation is, it's reached critical mass. I'm going to look one more place. Bear with me here, and I'm going to look one more spot. That sometimes I mean, you would think that this information should be a little bit more easily gleaned. Here we go. Daily Insight. There we go. Carryovers. No, I don't see it here. All right, I'm going to have to let me reach out. All right, and meantime. Brian, here, let me send you the information for John, all right? And we'll have John Gunther join us. Joe Clancy is going to visit for the Saratoga Special conversation, plus we'll slip Tony in as well. And then later, don't forget, Crafty Jeff Franklin. When using Thoroughgraph. Mike Beer, as promised, once the Naira scratches are ready. And is that it? Lazarus Gunther, Tony, Beer, Franklin. And then, yeah, there it is. All right. John Gunther here shortly. And Delmar back today. And kind of a nice, just straightforward card, turf fillies, two-year-olds start the action, and then there's no stake today. Tomorrow, the real good deal, and of course, we talked about which horse did we talk about with Craig, right? With Delazzi, yeah, Donnie the Cairo, 20-1. Didn't have the morning line when we talked to Craig on Monday. Brian Corner's got the favorite, Pure Madness. These are the two-year-old Calbreds going 7/8 tomorrow. Nice, yeah, good full fields. So the Del Mar action continued, and happy here the day before Justify becomes a Hall of Famer. John Gunther joins us. And John, congratulations again.
Well, thanks very much. It's very exciting history in the making, and I have to give a lot of credit to my daughter, Tanya. I mean, she planned the meeting, she was on to Scott Daddy very early in her career, and to end up winning the Triple Crown and then making the Saratoga Hall of Fame is just unbelievable. It's so fantastic.
Yeah, I mentioned, John, that when you were going to join us to celebrate this, that it has to be a unique pleasure to have bred the horse, and of course, it's his on-track exploits that he's being acknowledged for as a Hall of Famer, but then for him clearly to end up a breed shaping sire, that's just a second act that I imagine you take great pleasure in.
Yeah, I mean, he's turned out to be a super elite sire on the world stage, and he's getting such tremendous racehorses like City of Troy and Opera Singer, and he's had so much success in the U.S. and overseas. It's absolutely amazing.
How many mares do you get to utilize him with annually?
Well, I booked 5 mares this spring to him. They didn't all get in full. And I bred 5 mares to him the year before, and 4 got in full. So we've got a pretty good crop coming, and we retained 4 Justifies to race on our own as well. So now we're quite excited about the prospects coming up.
Yeah, and I imagine, and then of course, there's what else? Stage Magic and her progeny. You've got that element to fold into all of this too.
Yeah, we bred Stage Magic to a couple nice stallions. We bred her to Intermischief, and we bred her to Gun Runner. So there's hopefully good things to come.
The story involving the lieutenant is just so sad that I don't want to bring it up again. But you're also campaigning Stage Raider, the half brother by Pioneer the Nile, and I've talked to Cherie DeVoe extensively. The talent is there, obviously, John. He's a quirky horse, though. She says you got to let him do what he wants to do.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. I mean, he's got the talent. He was a TDN Rising Star. He's won a stake, and he's graded stakes place, and but he's got to get it into his head. If he doesn't want to run, you're in trouble, But he does have that ability, and so we're going to try him again in the ACAC. We ran 3rd in it last year, so I'll give it another try this year. And we might even try a stake on the turf, just as the ACAC doesn't come up till September. So, our dream is to get enough black type where we can stand him in Kentucky, and I think he could. I mean, he's a very good looking horse, and I think being by a Triple Crown producer out of a Triple Crown producer, I think there's a lot to look forward to there.
Yeah, well, just this past week, it sure looked like he was poised in the Monmouth Cup, and he wasn't that interested in participating.
No, he didn't even try. I mean, it was terrible. I mean, it just drives me crazy, and Cherie must be going out of her mind because he trained so well before the race.
Exactly. Exactly right. Meanwhile, we'll circle back to Justify, but since we're talking, you know, siblings or other, you know, other Gunther products, Without Caution's performance, and what are some thoughts about what Without Parole has done, the Frankel son?
Well, I mean, you know, we had some big offers for Without Parole after he won the St. James Palace Stakes, but then if we sold him, we would not be able to race him at four. He would have went off to Japan. So Tanya and I decided to take a gamble and run him as a four-year-old, and then we retained 100% interest in him when he went to stud at Neusel's. So we've bred some nice mares to him, and it seems to be paying off. Without Caution ran a really, really big race. We're quite excited about him. We're aiming for a stake for him in the next month. And we raced another one called Good Conduct. Her first start was very impressive. She was last turning for home by 12 lengths, and she made up about 9 lengths in the stretch, and it was only going 5.5. And I think stretching her out, she'll really perform well. But in the meantime, he's had 6 winners to date, and I think there's a lot more to come. So we've got our fingers crossed, but it looks promising.
Very much so. And, you know, those that may have cashed the close to $30 winner for Cherie, first week of the first full week of Saratoga, and, you know, feels like a Breeders' Cup juvenile turf candidate, certainly.
Yeah, if we could pull off winning a stakes, it would be unbelievable if we could get in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. That would be icing on the cake. That would be just amazing.
And you know, I hadn't noticed this back when he ran, John. He's a May 9th foal.
Yeah. he's turned out to be for a late foal, he's really developed into a nice-looking two-year-old.
Unbelievable. John, at the time when Justify was going through this mercurial campaign, and we talked actually a lot, and then subsequently, and of course Lenny Shulman with the book, you talked to Lenny quite a bit because he really chronicled the horse. It really was magical, and you know, as it happens on the show, because Rick Hammerly would visit even back to the maiden race where Bob Baffert came to Rick's office and said that maiden race really needs to go because I got a horse that can win the Derby. and Rick was like, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah, I know. I went to bet him on his first start, and he went off 1-2 and won easily. And then for the features bet for the Kentucky Derby, I flew a friend down to Las Vegas to bet the features as much as I could afford at the time, and that was before he won the Santa Anita Derby. And I told my son, even before either Vino Rossa or Justify ran, I said, he asked me if I got any horses that I bred going into the Kentucky Derby, and I said, yeah, we're going to have 2 in the Derby. And he thought I was crazy, you know. So we end up both being in the Derby, and Justify wins the Triple Crown, and I mean, it was all magical, as you said. It was just wild.
Well, and then when you get through the Derby win, which ends up being, when he made the front, it was a little bit of a procession. But then there was the surreal situation in Baltimore, John, that was just with the fog and not really knowing what was going on out there. Crazy.
Yeah, I was watching. I didn't get to the Preakness, and I'm watching it, and you couldn't see it with the fog. You couldn't see anything. And then all of a sudden, Justified jumps out of the crowd, sort of speaking. And it was unbelievable, really.
Well, and my wife and I, Tina and I, we moved down from, we had been in the press box, and we, you know, for the race, we wanted to get lower because you really, from up high, it you could see next to nothing. And even down at track level, you really didn't see them till, I don't know, the 16th pole, I think, is when they first emerge end up, you know, being close and being exciting.
Yeah, no, it was wild, absolutely wild.
We get to New York.
Then we go to Belmont, and
yep.
Being there at Belmont was really exciting as well.
Talk about that, John, and you know, you're this close at that point, you know, to real immortality and something that is really the rarest of feats in sport, and it's a horse that you bred that's a product of all really a distillation of everything that you and Tanya have worked at. What was the anticipation like? How did the anticipation, the 3 weeks leading up to the Belmont?
To the Belmont, well, it was, you know, I really felt he'd win the Belmont. I mean, it was, you know, usually I get really, really nervous and, you know, I'm pacing the floor and nervous as can be. But when they went in the gate, you know, my heart wasn't racing like it normally does. I mean, I just felt very confident that he had won the race, and fortunately, he did. But it was probably the greatest experience in my lifetime to see him win the Belmont. You know, especially all the work Tanya put into it and planned the mating and ends up with a Triple Crown winner. And, I mean, it was such a rewarding experience. And then we left New York and went to Royal Ascot, and we had Without Parole in the St. James
right.
Palace. And and that was 10 days later, and he ends up winning that. And, I mean, it was just an unforgettable year. And then Prince Harry and Meghan presented the trophy, so the whole family was quite excited about that. And unfortunately, the publicity that followed wasn't too good, but it was still quite the experience.
No doubt. You continue. I mean, what other, this is an unusual question a little bit. Once you have a horse like this, what else is there to accomplish, John?
That's the problem.
Right?
I don't know where to go now. Just keep trying, I guess, you know. We've had 7 homebreds make the starting gate at the Kentucky Derby, so that's quite an accomplishment, which I give Tanya the credit for as well. I mean, to have a small broodmare band and have 7 make the starting gate in the Derby is quite something as well.
Let's hope
we get another Derby starter.
With Justify himself, producing, and I'm curious, were you pleased that Comart has pulled back on shuttling him and are going to make people come to him now internationally?
Yeah, I mean, that for sure. You know, the number of mares that he bred in the U.S., I don't know, it's probably over 200. I think the best thing that ever happened is not sending him back to Australia again. You know. And Kumar, you know, they shipped a couple plane loads of mares to breed to him this spring, so he's still going to be well presented in Europe over the next few years as well. So I think it's too much to ask of a stallion to do both northern and southern hemispheres. It's just too much on, too hard on them.
Yeah, there's too much. There's been too many shuttle stallions that, you know, that have developed issues, or, you know, it's a lot to ask.
Yeah, it really is. You know,
this horse. It just gave you obviously such a thrill ride. I'm sure we're going to talk to Bob Baffert tomorrow and over the weekend. Bob in town, of course, and running in the Whitney. You know, thoughts about him and Mike Smith and you know, all the parts of it that the way it came off.
Yeah. Well, I wish I could have made it.
It
was a historic event, but I just wasn't able to do it, so. But it's exciting for sure.
Now, you and Tanya deserve tremendous tremendous acknowledgement. When it came to Scat Daddy at the time, and of course he, you know, there's evidence right there of a horse that felt the ill effects of shuttling.
That's right.
Right, and gone prematurely. What appealed? What was it that Tanya? What in terms of Stage Magic?
She loved the cross with Stage Magic. It inbred full sisters. I forget the exact cross. Tanya's more on top of it than me, but she liked Scat Daddy. She was looking at Scat Daddy's stats early on in his career, and she was on Scat Daddy even before Kumar got excited about him. And there was something she saw in that cross that she liked, and she liked Scat Daddy pretty well ahead of everybody else. I forget what we bred to him for. I think it was around 25,000 or... Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, and at that point, the lieutenant hadn't made the races yet for the Warrens, right? You didn't even know yet that she was going to be a producer, Stage Magic.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So it's been quite an experience for sure.
Well, and you're not done. There is, we talked about Stage Raider. There's two Curlins, Spell on You, who's the 4-year-old filly that's 0-for-2. But then there's an unraced 3-year-old by Curlin, One Champ. You've got a Mendelssohn filly that is the 2-year-old. One Champ is a 3-year-old. And then did she slip, or was she reset in 23? She didn't have a foal.
She never got in full.
She didn't get in. She didn't catch. And now by her side, well, actually now probably weaned, there's an Into Mischief filly, and obviously, you know, the chance to keep the fillies, I imagine.
So I'm going to keep all the fillies out of the mare,
Yeah, exactly. Well,
John,
It's great to catch up, and I wanted to make sure, knowing that you weren't going to be able to make it tomorrow, I wanted to make sure you got some spotlight and you know, a chance to reflect on just an amazing outcome and a tremendous accomplishment as a breeder.
Well, thank you very much, and I'll pass that on to Tanya as well.
Sure, please. Something tells me we'll see you at Del Mar for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf.
Yeah, I'll touch wood. I'm hoping to be there.
I love it. John, thank you.
Yeah, no, you're very welcome. Thanks for calling.
John Gunther, everybody, and daughter Tanya, they've had so much success, but crafting Justify, and, you know, we should, you know, certainly from an ownership standpoint, you know, the China Horse Club people and Sal Cumin with his head of planes, Starlight, Windstar, you know, the agglomeration of ownership. And he would, I'm trying to think, he wore the China horse in the Belmont, because I got a picture of him coming up the walkway from the paddock, and I'm pretty sure he wore the Windstar, right? He wore Windstar white and, you know, green in the Preakness. I can't remember. You're going to have to look this. I'm going to have to look at a photo. Although, Skip, you know, Skip Dixon gave me a, I've got a poster somewhere that I haven't framed yet of three pictures of the Triple Crown that Skip took. He did one for American Pharoah too. Actually, just looking at the time, Brian, let's roll some music and we'll take the bottom of the hour break. There you go. Nicely done. Let's see what we got here. Now I'm, my curiosity is piqued. Looks like he wore the Windstar. Looks like he wore the Windstar colors for the Derby. Yeah, he did. Right? And there's the Belmont. Where's Preakness? Derby, Belmont. What, you forget about, I'm going to have to look through my phone too, because I got a crazy picture of Tina in the Preakness in the gloaming. Wait, hold on. Preakness. No, he wore Windstar for that too. He wore the Windstar jacket in the Preakness. Yeah. Nice. All right. Thanks to John for that. I appreciate it. I should get Tanya on too at some point. I haven't had her on. The other results from yesterday, and of course I've got to find the selections from Dick. There's Indy. Where's Presque Isle? All right. Can't find it. Because I'm not sure if that I did not get a chance to pay attention to. If you saw what went on, what's going on this desk, you just laugh at me. like, this is ridiculous. All right, Joe Clancy. I want to slip Tony in. Jeff Franklin, Mike Beer. Let me see. if those scratches should... Nyra Betts has been getting the Saratoga scratches up even faster. They're not up yet. Scratch time was 10 o'clock. A lot of mornings, the scratches have been showing up at Nyra Betts even before Andy gets them. How about that? 90 in, 90 to come. Thursday, the races. Back after this.
Please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Nyra Betts. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions. And offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Nyra Betts. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NyraBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
The PA Horse Breeders Association presents the new and improved Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Six $100,000 stakes for PA sired, PA bred Zoot Parks. Two 6-furlong contests on PA Derby Day. The 2-year-olds then go 7 furlongs on December 30th. Here's the big change. The last two races are in August 2025 for 3-year-olds. Then 50,000 in breeder bonuses go to the top 3 horses in the series. For more, go to PABred.com.
This